Hi, this is Keith Cutter with EMF Remedy. You're listening to Reversing Electromagnetic Poisoning. This podcast was created for the EMF refugees out there. Electrohypersensitivity, or EHS, is a stupid and unproductive label that's holding us back. That will be the subject of our discussion today, and I'd like to share with you my opinions in this matter. We're going to take kind of a deep dive in looking at that term, why I think it is a type of wrong think, and we're going to get into some fantastic context. We have been soldiering through a lot of very technical information for the last month or so, and talking about specific remediation techniques for the different types of radiation. So today we're going to take a more philosophical approach, no less important, I think, in the overall scheme of things, but definitely a change of pace for us here. And much needed, I think. So let's take a little bit of time to consider this. The reason I think EHS, or commonly called electrohypersensitivity, is an unproductive label. And, you know, before I mention why, I have to tell you I'm guilty of using this label. In fact, I used this label for a number of years, and I still am tempted to use this label on occasion. I may have even used it recently in a correspondence that I wrote to somebody who, like myself, has been poisoned by non-native electromagnetic fields, non-native EMF. Another word for the type of electromagnetic radiation that God did not create when he said, "Let there be light." The God-created type of EMF appears to be nothing but healthful and helpful to our biology, and almost without exception, the man-made type seems to be harmful, or certainly the man-made type that we are using as a basis of our very civilization is harmful. So the reason I have used it in the past is because it's kind of a shorthand, if you will. So I was writing a message to an individual who was involved in this same space of wanting to help others who have been poisoned. He had been poisoned himself. And I think I redrafted it, but I think I started to write, "Hey, I'm EHS." Because, you know, those of us who have been poisoned, we understand what that means, right? But we tend to use this in our communications with others. And others look at us and they'll pick that up, whether it be healthcare providers or loved ones, people we've had interactions with, they'll pick up that term. And I think it is a bad idea. I think it's an unproductive label and a type of wrong think from George Orwell's book, Wrong Think. You know, it's something we shouldn't be thinking. The reason is it creates an unnatural division, a type of us versus them. It hides what is really going on. It confuses the problem with what is not the problem. So I'm going to get into each one of these in more detail But first, I want to examine a bit of context. And you know how I feel about context. I feel in the modern world in which we're living, information without context is without value. Giving people more and more information is not helpful without understanding how the pieces fit together. It is the difference between data and information at that point. So I want to share this context so that we have a good basis for our discussion. I think there's a lot of value in having what I will call a high context relationship. You know, we all have these people in our lives who we may see every day or every week, and we say, "Hi, George," or, you know, whoever it may be, or "How's the weather?" or something in passing. We recognize them. We keep the image of them in our mind so that we can recall their name. But we just don't know them any more than "How's the weather?" kind of conversation. The greater context you share with someone, the more points of connection that you can have with that person, and then you can sort of develop a shorthand for communicating important ideas. There is no way to accomplish perfect context with anybody outside of spending hours, days, weeks, years. My wife and I have been married for almost 35 years now, and we still enjoy learning new things about one another. So this is a lifetime pursuit, acquiring context in the relationships that are important to us. Can't be done in a short period of time. I'm going to read you something. It's not all that long. It's less than one page long, and it'll give us a tiny bit of context, but enough for this hour or so we're going to spend together. So without further ado, this will be from The Invisible Rainbow, written by Arthur Furstenberg, copyright 2015. I'll be reading a short excerpt from the chapter called In the Land of the Blind. In 2014, Japanese physician Tetsuharu Shinjo published a before and after study that is a harbinger of the direction in which the world needs to go. He evaluated the health of the residents of an apartment building in Okinawa, upon whose roof cell phone antennas had been operating for a number of years. 122 individuals, representing 39 of the 47 apartments, were interviewed and examined. Prior to the removal of the antennas, 21 people suffered from chronic fatigue, 14 from dizziness, vertigo, or Meniere's disease, 14 from headaches, 17 from eye pain, dry eyes, or repeated eye infections, 14 from insomnia, 10 from chronic nosebleeds. 5 months after the antennas were removed, no one in the building had chronic fatigue. No one had nosebleeds anymore. No one had eye problems. Only two people still had insomnia. One still had dizziness. One still had headaches. Cases of gastritis and glaucoma resolved. Like the residents of that building before the study, the majority of the people in the world today do not know that their acute and chronic illnesses are in large part caused by electromagnetic pollution, they do not talk to each other about their health problems and are unaware that they are shared by many of their neighbors. So, interesting section in a very interesting book. My note here would be that 39 of the 47 apartments are represented, equates to 83%. I have a question. Were the problems identified here caused by residents who were too sensitive? Were there problems because they were hypersensitive? Well, okay. Clearly the problem was the radiation. Otherwise, the medical situations would have not resolved after the removal of the cell phone antennas. The problem was not the residents being too sensitive, unless 83% somehow represents hypersensitivity. You know, there are very few windows that we get into situations like this. This is a great documented finding. This would be called in the literature, this would be called anecdotal and not something we can use for serious research, right? A few things to note about this kind of before and after scenario. It is common, I would say, in all cases that I'm familiar with where EMF poisoned clients that I've worked with in my EMF consulting business realized that non-native EMF is the problem. It is that seemingly God-sent aha moment where somebody is able to establish a contrasting situation, the sort of with and without, or before and after, in some cases the here or there, all revolving around dramatic increase or dramatic reduction of non-native EMF, during which they noticed a change in their health condition. And that's where it begins for, I think, everybody I've ever come across. The question is worthy of thought. What about the people who are suffering and they never have that aha moment, either because they've never been blessed with a before-after scenario that's clear, or because they don't think in terms of before and after? Hey, I'm feeling better today. You know, what caused that? Or for the last 3 weeks, I've been feeling terrible. I don't know. That's why I say it's like a blessing from God when people get that insight. So with regard to the removal of cell antennas from the apartment building, would such a stark sick/well contrast, this is a hypothetical, it's a question for you, would such a stark, you know, example of being sick and then being well, would that kind of a contrast be more likely in an area where the apartment top cell phone antennas are the only nearby cell antennas? Or what would be the effect of having a super saturated environment where, you know, I've heard of somebody who, you know, they did a search on, antenna search online, and if you're not familiar with that, you can put in your location, your address, and it will tell you how many towers and how many antennas are near you. I can't recall if it's 2 or 3 miles. You know, truly, after the experience that I've had in this business, the answer to that question, if it's one, it's too high, in my opinion, really. And I've heard people say that they've done that search and there have been 300 antennas within a 2 mile radius. So my question for you, and I don't have an answer to this, but just a thought exercise here, which is, would you be more likely to be able to tell the difference when cell phone antennas are taken away if you're in an area where there are 299 other cell phone antennas in a small area, or cell phone plus area-wide Wi-Fi, or whatever constitutes all of those antennas? It seems obvious, doesn't it? I mean, to create that stark a difference, you'd think the optimal thing would be a pristine environment that had a cell phone tower or antennas, in this case, introduced to the into the environment, devastating, you know, the health of individuals, and then get the thing turned off and have there not be a multitude of other antennas. I would think that would establish the clearest sort of before and after, that contrast that we were talking about. So here's a question. In the future, as we move forward, where the insane objective of some individuals is to create an internet of things where we would exponentially multiply the RF, radio frequency radiation sources, in any and every environment for benefits that I can't understand. Certainly nothing worth causing suffering and death. Anyway, is it going to be easier as we move forward to establish that contrast in the future? And I have another question. So, what is the next step from an adverse health perspective beyond chronic fatigue, which is one of the things mentioned in this brief passage? What is the next step? What is the logical progression? If you were enjoying good health and your exposure to this particular type of radiation over time resulted in you descending into a lower health level where you had chronic fatigue, you just had no energy to do anything. My question is, what's the next step? What comes after chronic fatigue? Insomnia. Insomnia was mentioned. What happens if you get less and less sleep because you simply cannot sleep? What happens next? Dizziness. If you are suffering from dizziness, now on a progression between excellent health and the absence of health, what is next after dizziness? Which way are we going? Headaches. Everybody's had a headache, right? I'm assuming here that headaches were so frequent that they were problematic in these people's lives. But, you know, I always viewed, and I was taught by my parents, and I taught my children, and they're teaching their grandchildren. When you have a headache, it's an indication of a problem. It's like the check engine light on your engine. And there's a reason for the existence of that headache, and it's a good idea to figure out what the reason is rather than popping an aspirin or a Tylenol. Not giving medical advice, just telling you how I was raised and how I raised my children. So if the headaches are an indication of a problem and you continue to bombard that individual with non-native radiation, harmful man-made electromagnetic radiation, what's next? Gastritis, what is next? Glaucoma, what is next? Do we imagine these are sort of isolated conditions in and of themselves? Or do we imagine that they are along a continuum and heading towards what eventual outcome? Is it reasonable to assume that for some of the residents of the apartment building, and I don't know how long these antennas were in place, how long that people had been living in that building, but let us suppose, for the sake of argument, that during the life of that building, while those antennas were up, one or more people may have passed away. During the time period since the original installation of the cellular antennas and before their removal, is it possible that cell phone radiation was a cofactor in their death? What are the non-health costs of these conditions? You know, so if we put aside sort of the suffering and possible death from the equation, what are the non-health costs of these conditions? Do you imagine that people may have missed a day of work? Maybe there were people who couldn't work at all. I mean, I can imagine if you're chronically fatigued, have insomnia, and are dizzy, it'd be hard to function. But I don't know. I don't have that data in front of me. I'm asking some questions based on what we are told here. So what are the non-health costs? Would there be maybe lost opportunities? For example, let's say you wanted to take your wife out for a special anniversary celebration. And either you or your wife are experiencing some of these health effects that we just talked about, and you have to cancel that celebration. Wonder if that would be the only thing you have to. Would there be birthday parties missed? Would there be, would there be promotions lost? Would your performance at work suffer? What of this idea of being in a continual state of sympathetic nervous system stimulation? And I don't know if we've talked about that before, but my understanding of the sympathetic nervous system stimulation is that is the fight or flee versus the parasympathetic mode that a body can be in, which is in contrast to fight or flee. It's characterized as the rest or digest So what is the relationship cost of being in a continual state of sympathetic nervous system stimulation? Would it be reasonable to assume somebody might become short-tempered, unable to relax? I won't belabor this, but you get the idea. We've chronicled here what were the health effects, and we're asking some questions beyond that. Hey, here's one. What do you think the before and after was? Do you think any of the people who were living in this building and who went through this experience of having this contrast, what do you think their attitudes were before and after? If you would have asked them whether cell phone radiation is a problem, or, you know, your Wi-Fi is dangerous, or, you know, my baby monitor is making me sick, or something like that. Do you think they would have a greater understanding and a greater appreciation if they were one of the 83% of the apartments that had one of these conditions? Do you think afterwards they would have a different opinion of, wow, you know, this type of man-made electromagnetic radiation is a problem? You know, we've seen it ourselves. Do you suppose that they would have ever figured that out if there hadn't been that moment of contrast? I like what the author was saying in the end about people don't share their health problems. And I think you'd agree from the things that we discussed, unless you were really in the know about this topic, I'm not sure a lot of people would be able to correlate chronic fatigue, insomnia, dizziness, headaches, gastritis, glaucoma with non-native electromagnetic fields. I don't know. But let's go ahead and let's move on. Now let's examine another bit of context, the normal distribution, and also something called the LD50. So here's a definition with regard to a normal distribution. So when I was studying mathematics at the university, this was something that was very common that we would look at depending on the types of problems that we were doing. Not every distribution is a normal distribution. There can be other distributions for a population. But in a normal distribution, or also what's known as a Gaussian distribution, it's a probability distribution, and it is symmetric about the mean, which means that data are going to be more frequent in occurrence the closer to the mean and less frequent in occurrence further from the mean. In graphical form, the normal distribution appears as a bell curve. So this is painful for everybody who knows what these things already are, but just for folks who may be new to them, we're talking about a graph, you know, a two-dimensional representation of a bunch of data points, and a normal distribution would look from afar like the silhouette of a, you know, an old school bell. Sort of a thin line on the left, a thin area opening up to a wide bell in the middle, and then decreasing in size towards the right-hand side is a mirror image of the other side, a bell-shaped curve. In a normal distribution, in a Gaussian distribution, there is 50% of the population is greater than the mean, and 50% is less than the mean. And I'm not a toxicologist, but I can have some familiarity with these things. And I can read about these things, and I can look up, say, from Wikipedia, for example, the definition of something called LD50. And I'm reading, in toxicology, the median lethal dose, LD50, abbreviation for lethal dose 50, LC50, lethal concentration 50%, or LCT50 is a toxic unit that measures the lethal dose of a toxin, radiation, or pathogen. The value of LD50 for a substance is the dose required to kill half the members of a tested population over a specified test duration. LD50 figures are frequently used as a general indicator of a substance's acute toxicity. So, this is uncomfortable to talk about, right? But if you turn up the intensity of RF radiation, I believe that would be what's called a directed energy weapon. I believe that was the stated objective of something back in the 80s called the Star Wars program, where they first looked at using RF radiation and also light, which is another type of electromagnetic radiation. Obviously, with the intensity turned up to 11, so to speak, on a 10-point scale, just meaning a lot of energy behind it, much more than your Bluetooth, is toxic. In fact, you could vaporize a person, a car, whatever, in an instant. And then we've got this sort of less radiation area where, curiously, at the same frequency, 2.4 gigahertz, as the initial Wi-Fi implementation and many other items of technology in our society, the microwave oven, the average microwave oven in the United States, operates at 2.4 gigahertz, that's billion cycles per second, the same as Wi-Fi, different modulation scheme, but pretty clear you wouldn't want to put your hamster in a microwave to dry them off, right? It's less intensity than the directed energy weapon, but still, obviously, nobody would want to do that. You wouldn't want to put a living thing in that much intensity of RF radiation. You just wouldn't consider it for obvious reasons. But curiously, people are exposing themselves to levels of RF radiation that are historically unprecedented. And in fact, it is such a strange sort of inversion of reality to live in a society and in a time when we somehow imagine that this type of radiation that can vaporize a whatever in an instant or cook a steak somewhere in the middle, and yet, you know, we're assuming that it's kind of safe to use as a phone that you'd hold up to your head, or a Wi-Fi router, or 10 Wi-Fi routers in a building and 50 phones and, you know, 300 towers in a 2-mile radius. So it begs the question, is there an LD50? If there is, what is it? How come we're not considering that? You know, we've got sort of this old paradigm, which is, hey, if it doesn't heat you, it doesn't hurt you. But that's been disproven for decades. So my question is, and I'm not stating, you know, what that LD50 is or if it exists. I'm asking a question, might it exist? Does that seem reasonable? Whether it is a Gaussian distribution, whether it is a normal distribution, whether it follows a bell-shaped curve. Here's my question. Do we consider the first one to die if we were to conduct a study, you know, that we couldn't because it wouldn't be a safe study, right? But do we consider the first to die, the first 10, the first 100, 1,000, 1 million? Do we consider them to be hypersensitive? Is that what we do when we establish an LD50 for arsenic, for cyanide, for strychnine? You know, all drugs have this computed, and many chemicals have this computed. Pathogens do as well, radiation do as well. So is the problem that the first organism to die, or the first few to die, was too sensitive? Or is the problem that that toxin was poisonous and shouldn't have been introduced into the environment? That's my question. On a related note, are faster movie downloads to cell phones worth the cost in life and health? I have found, in my experience, in a variety of problems, I've found the ability to separate what is and what is not the problem to be of paramount importance. It is the key job of any consultant, and that is whether you're working in business, in engineering, in science, in medicine, I would imagine in just about any pursuit. Finding out, figuring out, when you get into a mode where you're trying to determine what broke, why didn't this work, what is work, you know, to be able to separate what the problem is, what the problem is not, is paramount importance. So the classical example is diagnosing a simple problem, not a complex problem, but a simple problem with a small gasoline-powered engine. In general terms, the problem is either with air, fuel, or spark. So if you've been to auto shop before, or you've ever worked on an engine, you know, by systematic elimination, you quickly rule out the things that are not the problem, and you're ultimately left with the issue, which is the problem. The problem with non-native EMF is that it has the potential to maim and kill. It's antithetical to good health and long life. The problem is not, I would propose, that some people are just too sensitive. I believe our language needs to reflect this reality. If you understand and communicate to others that the problem is in you, in other words, oh, I'm EHS. Oh, what's EHS? Oh, I'm electro-hypersensitive. You'll get sympathy, perhaps, if you're not thought to be crazy. But is sympathy productive? And if it is productive, is it the most productive thing? You know, sure, there may be a focus on accommodation. Well, you know, Keith is a little different. He thinks he is sensitive to EMF. So, you know, we'll make an accommodation for him. Whether we think he's crazy or whether we think he's, you know, telling the truth. It's just, it's him. It may help in the short term, and everybody has to work. So clearly, it would be wonderful if whatever you're doing for a living, there could it be an accommodation reached where you may have lower radiation exposure, but really no strategic, long-lasting help for the long term. I don't think it's really the strategic place to be in the long term to achieve the greatest result. So as one who has been poisoned, I had been poisoned by EMF. I needed to be focusing on achieving a pristine environment. That was my number one priority. Everything came second to that. My lifestyle, my amusements, my, you know, whatever, everything went out the window, and I figured out how to get to the basement, the bottom floor on my exposure to man-made radiation. I found very little sympathy and very little accommodation. That was my experience, and I was so new to being poisoned and having to learn all the technical details with regard to assessment and remediation that I had my hands full, honestly, dealing with all that. But no, I didn't find much sympathy or much accommodation. If I had, and I have since, some people have been sympathetic and accommodations have been made here and there that have made life a bit easier, but they're not addressing the primary issue. The primary issue is, you know, we could call it politely an environmental toxin, right? That's kind of a polite label for the thing that's maiming and killing. Now, for other people who haven't traveled this path that you and I have traveled, they haven't become aware, they haven't made that correlation between man-made radiation and their health. And most people don't understand. I would make the argument, and this is probably for a different podcast, there's this wonderful term in the Bible called willfully ignorant. Isn't that a wonderful term? Willfully ignorant. And I heard a teacher talking about that as people who are ignorant on purpose, you know, like stupid intentionally. That'll have to be another podcast perhaps, but I do think people sort of look through cracks on their hands that are over their eyes, you know, sort of avoiding the whole topic of this strange attraction to radiation-producing devices. So we're talking about others and the effect of using language like I'm EHS has, as opposed to communicating in a different way. So when you say that the problem is me, it's I am electrohypersensitive, the others, whether they're reading something you've written or listening to you or the accommodator, they assume that the situation does not affect them, that they are excluded. So I have to say, in the work that I do day to day with my EMF consulting, I go into people's homes at their request and I do a careful and objective analysis of the different types of man-made radiation and where those levels are in the different parts of their home. I'm able to ascertain how much they're generating themselves and find out how much is in the ambient, the surrounding area. And we focus on ways, either sort of two types of customers. One is, can we achieve any reductions? And that's perfectly legitimate. The other is that People need to get their numbers down into the basement. They have an urgent felt need, an immediate priority in their life to get to or as close to zero as possible. So sort of two different types of people. I don't, believe it or not, day to day, I don't deal with people really that don't get it. I deal with people who, like the listeners on this podcast, they get it. They get it because they've been poisoned. They don't need to have it explained. But for others, for people who don't get it, when you say you're EHS, they assume that the situation doesn't affect them. They're excluded. So it won't help with others. They'll never get it. Not that I spend any time because of this willful ignorance thing that is going on in our society. I really don't spend a lot of time with people who don't get it. Except we do, right? Except we do. For love's sake. 90% of the time I can go and I can just focus on the business and whatnot. But you see, and I've done this. I saw a young lady at an ice cream store, and she had a cell phone in her hip pocket. And I just had to tell her about the health effects that are possible. But she looked at me bewildered, and you can imagine how that went. But I say I don't do it, but then I do sometimes. Mostly, I do for the sake of my children. For my grandchildren, I don't want them to suffer the kinds of effects that we've mentioned today, and then also what comes next. We talked about that question. But if you tell people that the problem is I'm hypersensitive, their immediate reaction in my experience is, I'm glad that isn't me. I'm glad I'm not one of those people. Now, that leads to, a topic of social programming, really, I guess. You've got this sort of divide and conquer mentality, and I think most people know where the real problems are and from where the problems emanate, but we are given constant distraction in the various types of media that we have access to, and the controlled platforms on which we're limited to being able to describe our thoughts and feelings on matters. And when you can divide and conquer, when you can create an us versus them, that's a bad thing. So, alternatively, if the language reflects the unnatural radiation as the source of the problem, it keeps everyone focused on the primary goal of purifying the environment, right? And it may help break the deeply embedded programming in loved ones and members of the community. And in that, one of the keys can be repetition. And it's amazing, you as a person who's been poisoned or you're being poisoned, and you're suffering this sort of sympathetic nervous system condition where you're in this fight or flight and you're just trying to survive the moment, never mind the day, and yet you're having an opportunity to interact with a fellow image bearer, a fellow member of mankind, and you patiently explain the situation to them and that it's based on the radiation, and it really, it just makes me sick. And you may end up having that conversation again and again and again, even with loved ones, even with people that are very intelligent, even with people that you think should have gotten it by now. But I find that repetition and patience can be the key there. So I'm not telling anyone what you need to do, but rather I'm saying, rather than saying I'm EHS, I like to say something like, whoa, hey, that kind of radiation, it really makes me sick. And however you want to handle that, hey, that's up to you. And I'm just trying to share my opinions, my experience. But I like to have an interaction, however brief, in which I don't establish clearly in their mind that this is a my problem, not a problem of society. So an answer in my mind, and you know what, there's probably people who are listening to this now that have an even better comment to make. And I haven't offered that this episode, but y'all are welcome to contact me through the website, emfremedy.com. There's a contact form there. Let me know if you have a better way of handling it than, oh, wow, hey, can you not turn that on, man? That type of radiation really makes me sick. But I have found something like that opens a space for productive dialogue. And it keeps the focus on the radiation, which a reasonable purchase may begin to understand that affects everybody. And in fact, you and I know every living thing. It'll also keep you, as somebody who has been or is being poisoned, from even considering using a wireless solution for anything. And of course, I will add, or exposing yourself to electric fields, magnetic fields, or dirty electricity either, but especially the most virulent form of non-native EMF contained in cell phones, portable phones, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. And as an aside, remember, we've talked about this, you don't have to give up necessarily computing or the internet. If you are still functional enough that you can tolerate using a computer at all, you might like to make sure that your environment is otherwise pristine and try connecting directly to the internet through a wired connection. All right, so in summary, non-native EMF is the problem. You are not the problem. Building a society around the use of non-native EMF is unsustainable. It leads to increasing levels of suffering and death. You're not hypersensitive. You're responding to being poisoned. That's a normal response to being poisoned. Recognizing this and prioritization of creating a pristine EMF environment is the most sensible priority, in my opinion. Continuing to use toxic products, exposing yourself to the non-native radiation, it isn't logical, and I would argue it's counterproductive. Electrohypersensitivity, or EHS, is a stupid and unproductive label. It's holding us back, and it shifts the blame for our increasingly toxic environment from the poison and the ones doing the poisoning to the very people who are being poisoned. So I hope that this discussion and the context has been helpful, because it is my experience personally, and I've seen this in other people as well. We all have this sort of capability of falling into cognitive dissonance, feeling one day like I'm being poisoned. The right thing for me to do is get to a pristine environment, or I try to create it in my home here, and I, you know, or shielded tiny house or a something, you know, and you're dead set on that. And the next day, you know, you're just worn down from being poisoned day in and day out. And you may have a down day. You know, you've been in sympathetic nervous system response for how many days, weeks, months, years? And, you know, you're only human, right? So you might have an unprofitable internal dialogue in which you begin to blame yourself. You may have an unsupporting spouse or another loved one who's not understanding. And I'm hoping that by spending some time even away from the critically important topics of assessment and physics-based remediation, you know, real remediation, not charms and harmonizers and whatnot. I'm hoping that that's helpful for you. So I want to thank you for spending some time with us. Again, this is Keith Cutter with emfremedy.com. See you next time.